There are thousands of remote islands and atolls in the Pacific that few of us have heard of, much less visited. It's home to scattered populations of Polynesians, Micronesians, Melanesians, and Austronesians. Coming up today on Travel with Rick Steves, we'll hear what living in Oceania taught author J. Martin Troost about himself and the adventures he had traveling in the wake of Robert Louis Stevenson. As you approach the east coast of Australia, the South Pacific becomes the Coral Sea. It's home to the only living organism on Earth that you can actually see from outer space. Historian Ian McCallman joins us now from Sydney to tell us how humans have been mesmerized and sometimes even terrified by the Great Barrier Reef. He fell under its spell back in 2001 while reenacting one of Captain Cook's voyages. And now Professor McCallman has written The Reef, A Passionate History. And he joins us on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us about the human side of the Great Barrier Reef. Ian, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you for all the work and the passion you've put into sharing a better understanding of the reef. Now, just before we get into this conversation, describe the Great Barrier Reef. It's just an amazing natural phenomenon.
It is almost indescribable. It's the only phenomenon that organic phenomenon that you can see from outer space. The astronauts could see it there in the little blue sphere, but it's enormous, so it's hard to encompass. I think it's 1,200 to 1,400 miles long. The region it encompasses is bigger than Japan. I gather it's even half the size of Texas.
Is there like substantial islands where you've got cities, or is it mostly just tiny little things that disappear at high tide?
No, there's substantial islands, but none big enough to encompass a city. But quite a lot of them have resorts. There's two different kinds of islands. They're the ones that have been created on the coral, which tend to be coral cays, you know, white sands.
Right.
Very vulnerable to rise of sea. And the others are volcanic areas that were, you know, when the sea rose up, were created as islands. And there are many, many of them. There are more than 3,000 islands, and some of them are strikingly beautiful.
Is the Great Barrier Reef, magnificent as it is in size and natural wonder, does it have a special place in the heart of Australians? I mean, Americans are all about, you know, the Grand Canyon or something like this. How do Aussies look at the Great Barrier Reef?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Rick. I don't think they see the Great Barrier Reef as deeply, for example, as Americans might see Yosemite or the Grand Canyon, as kind of central icons of the country, partly because the country's so big. It's a continent. And so if you're at the other end of it, you know, it takes you 6 or 7 hours to fly there. But it's partly because I think people have only seen small bits of it. There are very few people been able to encompass the reef. So, you know, when you visit it, you might go to an island or a resort or something, but you only see a small area. So, you know, one of the things I wanted to demonstrate in this book was how deeply it is connected with our myth, if you like, or, you know, our foundational views of ourselves. And also to get across my passionate concern that we might lose it.
Now, you're a professor of history. How did you become so fascinated by and involved in the Great Barrier Reef?
Yeah, well, that's a weird story, Rick. I mean, initially, it was about 10 years ago, I was inveigled onto a reenactment done by the BBC and also by the Discovery Channel in the States of Cook's voyage through the Great Barrier Reef on a replica under simulated 18th century conditions. And it was absolutely horrifying. It was really a kind of big brother at sea, you know.
Uh-huh.
But it put me through this most beautiful place, and I fell in love with it.
Are you a city slicker or are you a country boy?
I'm a bit of a mixture. Yeah, I did do you would be familiar with the phenomenon in the States. I did, during the 70s, I dropped out and built a mud brick house in the country like, you know, a hippie.
And you're a professor of history, and that's what's interesting to me, is because this book that you've written is a passionate history, meaning the story of people. I mean, there's like, you just highlight 20-some people who were captivated by the reef over the last couple of centuries, explorers, resource seekers, castaways, indigenous people. Talk about that human overlay to the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah, that's something that came to me. I mean, in some ways it seems obvious enough, but the way we look at a reef or a mountain is determined by what we feel inside, what we think about it. And that's what makes it, that's what creates it. And what struck me, particularly on this voyage, was the reenactment voyage, was for Cook, the reef was an unimaginably terrifying and horrible place.
Was that just because he could run aground?
He could run aground and they would sink immediately in wooden ships and be bashed to pieces.
That's like having a cat in a room full of rocking chairs with a long tail, you know, when you're taking your boat to the Great Barrier Reef without modern charts.
Absolutely. It's like a minefield, honestly. And then there was their great fear that they'd, if they did make land, which they did after they got wrecked, that they would be killed by savages, you know, with spears and eaten. And they called it the Labyrinth after the, you know, the myth of the Minotaur, the great bull-headed beast waiting to eat you. And that's how they viewed it.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We are voyaging into the terrifying labyrinth of the Great Barrier Reef, about as big as the west coast of the United States. We're joined by Ian McCallman, and his new book is The Reef, A Passionate History. Ian, when you're thinking about the characters that sort of enliven the whole story of the reef, who would you highlight for us just briefly? What's one character that sort of epitomizes the human overlay of this great natural structure?
Well, it's hard to pick one single story, but I think, I mean, one of the weirdest stories is the story of the first reef scientist who was called Saville Kent. And he was a British scientist who came out and fell in love with the reef. But when you look at his human story, when you try to explain why, not only did he fall in love with the reef, but he produced this sublime book with photographs and paintings and knowledge about the reef, you find that in his background, he was back in England as someone who participated as a child in the murder of his 3.5-year-old half-brother. And he got away with it. His sister went to prison for him, in effect, for 22 years. And he was haunted. He more or less ran away to Australia to escape and make a new life. His sister followed him, actually, after she got out of prison. But that's another story. What I wanted to stress was this was a wounded, diminished, hurt man who came to the reef and found something sublime, something that was a kind of... It represented everything that was wonderful for him. And he turned it into this masterpiece of a book. But he could never have done it if he hadn't been so wounded and so hurt. So I suppose that's where the human history connects with the actual encounter with the reef.
So you have quite a variety. You're highlighting the stories of 20 people whose life really was the reef. And the fascinating thing about this collection you've put together in your book is that you get into the mind of each of these characters who came to see the reef as even more than a place. Talk about Ted Banfield, sort of a modern-day Robinson Crusoe.
Yeah, he's a kind of mixture of Robinson Crusoe and Yor Thoreau, who was one of his heroes. And while Thoreau got himself a hut on the edge of Walden Pond, Banfield ran away from civilization, even though it was only a small town, which was really destroying him. He was a journalist and unsuccessful. And he ran away to an island called Dunk Island. And then he was restored to health by living there in this wild island. And he started to write about it in the way that Walden did, a kind of romantic beachcomber's tale of what it's like to live in a wonderful, deserted, tropical island in the middle of the Great Barrier Reef. And he wrote a series of books that had an effect rather similar to Walden. They were actually well received in the States as well as in the UK, even more than in Australia.
Ian McCallman's book, The Reef, is published by Scientific American. We have a link to his website and to his online exhibit that tells the human history of the Great Barrier Reef. It's in this week's Travel with Rick Steves show details. You'll find that in the radio section of our website at ricksteves.com. As a traveler today, can you be inspired by these romantics that wrote about the Great Barrier Reef 100 years ago?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. There is quite a significant group of painters who've lived on the reef, you know, who've lived that kind of art escape. and have produced some magnificent art, and but also interwoven with quite romantic stories of encounters and possible shipwrecks and meetings of sharks.
Are there dramatic shipwreck sites that you'll find when you go to the Great Barrier Reef? There must be a lot of shipwrecks there.
There are a lot of shipwrecks, though most of them were wooden ships.
Right.
And so they're very hard. And also they get incredibly overgrown with coral. That's actually been one of the things I've been doing, is working with archaeologists finding shipwrecks.
You also mentioned how Darwin got the creation of coral reefs wrong.
Yes, well, in some ways, Darwin got it right. What Darwin realized was that there's a mystery about reefs, because the little corals, little tiny little polyps that create them, their little limestone skeletons, can only live in relatively shallow water where there's light. So how do they produce these reefs that go down hundreds of meters to the bottom of the dark seas? And he realized that it would have to be that the ground, the ocean bottom, was sinking very slowly, so they were always in the light.
Oh, so they were born, the reefs were born in shallow water, and then over time that sank deeper?
Exactly, exactly. Okay. And there were lots of people who questioned him, including some famous Americans. And part of my story is about American expeditions to the reef that were very important in determining this story of how coral works.
There's more with Ian McCallman and the history of the Great Barrier Reef just ahead on Travel with Rick Steves. Share your thoughts with us about the Great Barrier Reef and the impacts humans and climate change are having on the reef and its ocean inhabitants. We have an online message board where you can post your thoughts anytime. It's in the radio section of ricksteves.com. And by phone, we're at 877-333-7425.